The themes and the content discussed in this programme may be of an adult nature. It is not suitable for younger ears.
Live and local.
After the Watershed with Alison Ferns and BB Lynch.
Evening, how are you?
I'm really good, how are you?
I'm good, I've just come straight from a two-year-old's birthday party.
Oh.
Which was interesting.
Were you the stripper?
No, it was my niece's birthday do, which meant my sister's in-laws were also present. Brilliant moment at the buffet table when, you know, making polite conversation, one of the relatives said, "Ah, yes, your sister says you work on the radio. Apparently you're working tonight. What's the topic of discussion?"
Oh, no.
Yeah, no, we were talking about... vaginas. What is it about that word? I know I shouldn't be embarrassed.
Your lips around it. Why did you...
She went there.
Why didn't you... What's Anthony doing? He's fine. Why didn't you just mime it?
That would be worse.
Would it be worse? It would be worse.
What, like kind of vagina charades. Like, no, let's not. The thing is, I kind of stopped and thought, do I just say we're talking about vaginas? Or do I say we're talking about, you know... ladies' bits, foo-foos, tuffy bits. I mean, there's so many different names that people use. Front, bottom. I toyed with that and then thought, no.
My friend's daughter once, when she was about six, was naked and just kind of was naming body parts. And she said to her mummy, "Do you like my legs? Do you like my thighs? Do you like my satsuma?"
Satsuma!
Wow. Live and local, after the Watershed on BBC Sussex.
I thought I'd heard them all, but even Satsuma's a new one on me.
Put me off easy peelers for life. Oh. I couldn't do it. No, look, stop it. Yeah, so you object to the word?
I don't object to the word. I just think it's slightly unfair on women that our bits are called a vagina, whereas, you know, men, you know, it's like willy. It's sort of, oh, it's more fun,
winky,
isn't it?
Winky.
It's just, I don't know, there's just something quite... medicinal, yeah. About the word vagina, yeah.
medical.
I just
medical.
Yeah,
yeah.
And the thing is, I mean, now I don't really have a name for my bits. Really.
Did you once? It sounds like you did.
Well, you do when you're a kid, don't you? So in
no,
my, you didn't. In my house, growing up, it was your front bottom.
Oh.
And then when...
that explains so everyone. There you go. That's
and
why.
Then when we had our daughter, I remember me and Paul having this discussion. What are we going to call it? And he's like, "Well, I suppose we could just go with vagina." I was like, "No, you can't say to a two-year-old, have you watched your vagina? You can't."
What did you go with?
We went with Twinkie.
Oh, this is unbelievable.
It gets worse.
No,
right?
It doesn't.
We don't call it a Twinkie anymore because we didn't realise at the time that there were some cakes in America,
yes,
also called Twinkies.
Yes.
And in fact, it was only last year we were in a farm shop that had an aisle for international produce. And Harry said, "Oh, Mummy, they sell Twinkies in here." I mean, no, it's just not. And I was like, no, come on, darling. "Mummy, look, vaginas. They sell vaginas." "No, darling, no. Because both my children have been taught, yeah, the proper terminology at school. That's now part of the curriculum.
Well, thank the Lord the school did the job. Thank you. Mary. Sometimes it's called Mary.
Mary?
Yeah.
I've never heard it called that.
Maybe my American thing, an American friend's mother calls...
Really?
Yeah.
But what if you are called Mary,
well,
and you've got a Mary?
It's confusing. You're twins. I don't know. It's double the joy. I don't know.
I understand why they now teach that at school, though, because there is quite a serious side to it. They were saying, because they had a meeting, because obviously they were concerned, I suppose, that some parents might not want their children to know the correct terminology, which is kind of silly in itself and shows a little bit, I think, about the kind of taboo and stigma maybe that still surrounds, which is, you know, basically a body part. And they said it's because often, and this is a serious side to it, in sexual abuse cases, children don't have a name. They don't know it's called a vagina. So when they're talking to the police or whatever, there's so many different sort of euphemisms for it that it's quite hard when they're taking statements. And I hadn't even considered that. So it's actually important that children know the correct names for parts of their body. And obviously know what's appropriate and what's not.
And what's not, I guess. Yeah, I mean, why would that be confusing, though? Because it's just, the police, I'm sure, could, you know, read between the lines and work out what the child was saying.
I guess. But why is it that we shy away from the word
vagina? Well, there are, you know, other options which are, you know, more offensive to some people or bit too cutesy or a bit like a bit, you know, 70s porn-tastic, which, you know, is not great. The interesting thing, I think, is a lot of the shame, because I think people are embarrassed, or women are embarrassed, and kind of don't embrace the vagina as the wrong kind of term. But do you know what I mean?
I do.
They don't celebrate it. They don't, because...
Not in the way men celebrate their penises.
Well, because they're out. They're always out.
Always? Invariably out. You know.
They're invariably out.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? It's easier to see what another man's... winky looks like.
Well, I suppose when men go to the toilet, I mean, I'm not saying you're stood there at the stalls looking at each other.
Oh God,
other.
I would, wouldn't you?
I'd be having a little look, wouldn't you? I would be like, I could. But imagine if women had to do that, had to be that open.
So women don't know what other women's vajayjays
look like.
Oprah calls them vajayjay. Let's go with
vajayjay,
that.
Vajayjay, I like that.
Yeah, and so therefore, invariably feel that you know, in the way we all do, we think ours is wrong. So actually today we're talking to several people that will actually have kind of created work around this and are celebrating it and saying that, you know, we're all different and that's how it should be.
Yeah, I think it was Finland actually who decided to try and come up with a new word for the vagina. I think it was Finland. I'm going to look this up. There was definitely a country that, a bit like what I was saying before, felt that it was unfair that little boys and men had these kind of nice words for that part of their body, whereas there was shame attached to a lot of the words. And I mean, the word that I think you were alluding to before, you know, is highly offensive.
To some people, it's the worst word you can say. Yeah. And why would our genitalia be named after the worst thing ever?
Yeah. Interestingly, we are going to be chatting to a lady later on who does a show, which the title of which is that particular word. Mm. Quite how we're going to get around that on the radio and introduce that.
Again, we will mime.
Out,
again, we will mime.
But it'll be fine. You said, though, there are a lot of people trying to kind of do what they can to try and destigmatise the vagina and stop making it such a taboo. One of those ladies is Laura Dodsworth, and she joins us on the line. Evening, Laura.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Hi, Laura.
Now, you took photos, didn't you, of 100 different vaginas?
Well, kind of. I photographed 100 women, but I photographed their vulvas, which is the external part.
Right. See, there was a big thing on Twitter about this, wasn't there, Laura?
Yes, there was. Yeah, it blew up into this massive Twitter storm. When the article about my project came out in The Guardian, it was the title of the article was Me and My Vulva. A man kindly stepped in and decided to tell everyone that I actually had been photographing vaginas and unleashed a flurry of responses back, including from gynecologists saying, no, she photographed vulvas. But he just continued to explain he was right. Oh. It was basically a mansplaining 101.
I was
going to
say, mansplaining like you've never seen before. Why did you do this?
Why? Good question. So there's a few reasons why I decided to do this. First of all, it's the third in a series of projects. My first project, I photographed and interviewed 100 women about their breasts. I followed that with a project with 100 men, focusing on their penises and what being a man meant to them. I never thought I'd do this, to be honest. It was never my plan to photograph 100 women's vulvas, but I read about a couple of stories in a short space of time. One was about the incidence of FGM here in the UK, and it really sickened me. And another was a BBC report about girls as young as 9 asking their doctor for labiaplasty.
Nine, did you say?
Yes,
that
9.
Is unbelievable,
and,
isn't
and
it?
Honestly, when I heard that, it was like a voice rose up in me, and I don't even know if it felt like my voice, and it just said no. The Guardian described me as a champion for men and penises, and I thought, how can I, a feminist...
what a title! Have you got that on
what
your
a business
CV,
card.
Yeah, it's going to go on my tombstone, isn't it? how can I be a champion for men and penises, but not for women and vulvas? I've got to do this. And I'd actually had the idea a long time before, but I think a bit of internalised shame had been holding me back. So that's why I wanted to normalise, I wanted to help normalise what we look like. You know, for us women, it's not very easy to see our vulvas. And I was honestly fascinated to see how I would look among the 100. So I wanted to help young women, and all women really, to see what vulvas look like in all their glorious diversity. And I used that body part as a very definitive part of our lives as women to open up a conversation through interviews about our lives as women.
It's honestly, it's so interesting. And do you think the shame does stem from the fact that we don't know that we're normal?
I think there's a special kind of shame and disgust and hatred that's reserved for the vulva and the vagina, actually. I think one thing that doesn't help is that women don't know what they look like. So I photographed and I interviewed women, and after I took their photograph, I'd show women their picture on the back of the camera. And a lot of women had never looked at themselves before. And there were women who were really quite nervous, and they were asking me if they were normal. So I went from somebody, you know, as a straight woman who'd never actually seen another woman's vulva up close in the flesh, to becoming the vulva expert, reassuring women that they were normal and pointing out what was what. So I think that because we don't see them, because they're tucked away, if you're a straight woman, you know, you don't see them, there is some anxiety. And if people want to have a look, you know, if you go and Google on the internet, what you're going to find is porn. You're going to find porn perfect, pink, neat, hairless pussies. And that's the point of comparison for young women today. I think it's kind of distorted what normal can really look like, which is all shapes and sizes.
So I've had a sneak peek at the book, and it's fantastic. So the book is called Womanhood, The Bare Reality, and then it was made into 100 Vaginas, The Recent Dark. And so there's a photo kind of the woman's torso, naked torso, full frontal, then a close-up of their vulva. And then, yeah, you interview them, and there are stories, and it's about, you know, pain or birth or motherhood or, you know, enjoyment or anything. Are there any memorable stories that uplifted you, or, you know, what are stories that you're like, yeah, that's one I want to share?
There's absolutely, oh my God, they're all so good. That's a really evil journalist question, because
Thank
they're
you.
All really good. I just want to say something. I'm quite often asked, you know, what's my favourite or what's the saddest? And the thing is, women don't get the floor very often. You know, women get half as many words in films as men do. And so I think there's a temptation when people ask me about this project to reduce it to something that's a bit two-dimensional. The fact is that every woman said something that was enraging and inspiring.
Yeah.
And every woman said something that was juicy and sexy, but also disturbing or sad. But some standout stories. There's the woman at the end. She's at the end of the book, and she features in the film 100 Vaginas, who had FGM. You know, she's undergone the most brutal violence that's inflicted upon a woman's vulva. And it's a very heartrending story. But she's also a sexual health nurse now and talks about vaginas every day of the week and is married and actually has a good sex life. But, you know, there's a lot of light and shade in her story. I found her really inspiring. When I interviewed her, every person on our all-woman crew was crying in the room. So she's very moving. There's some lovely stories. There's a woman who gave birth and orgasmed when she gave birth. That was amazing.
What?
I know. I wish I could have ordered
Does
a birth
that
like that.
Really
her
happen?
Child must love that story.
Well, he doesn't know. Now, this is the interesting thing. She didn't let anyone in the room know it happened, and she's still never told her husband. She's told me anonymously in an interview.
What drugs was she on? I want what she's having. Wow, really?
It was a completely natural birth. And it's rare, but it actually can happen.
Wow.
It can happen. But she had this sense of shame. This is kind of crossover with birth, with a baby and an orgasm. But it's just a physiological response, and it's a rare one. But her son doesn't know. But that's the kind of birth
that's one
I would
to
have
share.
Ordered.
It is 21st, isn't it? I should tell you, Laura, because you'll love this. We mentioned the book, and you kindly sent a copy through on PDF. Of course, BB opened it up on a crowded train station platform.
Good.
I think there was some very interested commuters looking at those full frontal shots over her shoulder. We mentioned the fact.
That's interesting, just in itself, because there would be this nervousness, like, oh, is this naughty? What will people think?
Yeah,
will this offend
yeah.
people? But pornography isn't actually about a body part, is it? Pornography is about context and intent.
Yeah,
and my photography is absolutely not pornographic.
Yeah.
And it's not sexual. There's nothing salacious or titillating about it at all. It's
and it is
the body part.
The vagina, you know, elicits that response rather than the penis, doesn't it?
Oh, I don't know. I think if you opened up a laptop
still
with a page full of penises,
God,
people
that happened
would
to me at the Mac store.
Did it?
I was getting my. I don't want to tell this story.
Okay,
but I
fine. But I think it was still.
I think
the same response.
I think the vagina is more loaded.
I think so, because the thing is, you, with a penis, it's either soft or erect. I mean, in manhood, in my book, Manhood, the photographs are all of flaccid, soft penises. An erect penis is different. Now, that's loaded. That's you know, there's a lot of fear and there's a lot of lust and a lot of nervousness about erect penises. It's the male taboo. But the thing about the vulva is, if you think about it in porn, it's quite passive. Things are done to it. Mm. So although the vulvas that I photographed in the book are not at all sexual, there's no spread of an inner thigh, there's no lacy underwear, it's literally just the vulva. We're used to seeing it as a passive body part that and things are done to it. Now, in fact, in the stories, that doesn't come across at all. Women do talk about sex, and they talk about things being done to them, and they talk about orgasms, and it's, you know, women are getting it on very gloriously in this book. But they're also talking about periods and menopause and birth and gynecological cancer and assault and rape. And the stories that they tell when I asked them about the vulva were really varied. Yeah. It was not at all pornography.
Well, there are serious health implications if you think about it. To this feeling of shame,
so to
around
not share. Yeah.
Yeah, around your vagina and your vulva. You know, we're seeing, you know, numbers of women going for smear tests
really low,
decreasing. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if it is because of this sense of shame. People are worried. People are thinking, oh no, that doctor, that gynecologist is going to be looking at me, thinking, oh look, she isn't shaved. Oh, look at the size of those lips. Mm. When actually, in reality, they're not thinking that at all. They're seeing vulvas all the time, aren't they?
Absolutely.
You know, it's like a bust, you know. Here's another one. Do you think, though, because obviously you've now seen a few, Laura, do you think there's more variety when it comes to women's vaginas than there is when it comes to men's penises? You know, you've seen one penis, seen them all sort of thing.
I don't know if there's more variety. I just think it was unexpected variety. It was unexpected for me. I mean, I had the most naive idea at the beginning. I thought there were porn vulvas, you know, pink, neat, small lips, hairless, and then normal ones like mine. And then I only had to photograph the first few women, and I was properly thrown by the first few because they were all completely different to mine. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. So when I look at the 100 vulvas, to me it looks like a seabed of different anemones or different flowers on a forest floor. They're really, really, really different looking. There's an amazing gradation of skin tone, of shape and size of labia, position of clitoris to vagina. You know, they're really, really different. But we don't know that. And that definitely contributes to shame. And like you said before, we're at an all-time low for women going for cervical smear tests.
Yeah.
And research has been done by Joe's Trust, a charity, that found that the main reason women don't go is body shame. Mm. I mean, if you think about it, if you walk through a supermarket, you almost have to do a walk of shame through the feminine hygiene aisle. Mm. There are a lot of products that are designed to make you feel you're too hairy, too smelly, too leaky, just too damn female.
That sounds like the Spice Girls. I'm sorry.
has doing this, Laura, changed the way you feel about your vagina?
Yeah, very much. My vagina and my vulva. When I looked at my vulva for the first time on my massive Mac screen, I got quite a shock.
Wow.
There is a lot
quite confronting, isn't it?
I also decided to grow a very fulsome bush. I'm the first one that I photographed. And I was really worried that everybody would have no hair. And I thought, I can't do that. I can't have 100 hairless ones. It's going to be a good mix. So I just really let mine grow fulsome, like I said. So there's a lot to look at. And it actually took me a few viewings to get used to it, because it's nothing like looking in a pocket mirror. Looking at a picture, which is, you know, a photograph that's been lit, it's very different. And actually, over time, I started thinking, oh, it's really pretty, really pretty. And it brought up a lot of memories, and I felt very tender about my experience as a woman, very tender about the memories, and also very tender about how it looks. I think I like it a lot more.
This is so
cool.
I really
like it. And I find that looking at them in general, I think they're all kind of quite pretty. I'm not saying that's changed my sexual orientation, but I feel like they're more erotic and more pretty than I thought before, because I've been looking at them. Like one type that you think of. You know, there is this whole variety, and you start seeing them for what they are.
And is that what you wanted from the book? What was your aim from the book? Do you think you've achieved it?
I think in retrospect, I have achieved it, but I don't know if I really knew what the aim was when I started. I think I was wrestling with some internalised self-censorship and shame. I was trying to do something for women and girls. Where it left me is just feeling great about myself as a woman. I loved all the stories. I thought the women were phenomenal. I think just as vaginas and vulvas are stretchy and they bounce back after birth and they bounce back after everything, women are resilient and powerful. And I just think that we come out of this project very well. You know, if you watch 100 Vaginals or read the book, I don't think you can fail to have anything except tenderness and respect and full-on admiration for the women. And if you feel that for other women, you feel it for yourself.
I tell you what you have achieved, Laura Dodsworth. You have achieved the right to call yourself champion of the vulva.
Yes.
Oh,
finally.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you. How brilliant.
Brilliant stuff. We've got a couple of clips, actually, from the documentary came from this book that Laura Dodsworth did. The book is called Womanhood, the Bare Reality. The recent Channel 4 documentary was called 100 Vaginas. Here's a clip.
Okay. Okay.
Bit more wrinkly than I'd have thought.
Do I have to?
It's not quite as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Like, maybe like a slug.
Ugh.
You know, I said it was Finland that invented a new word for ladies' bits. It wasn't, it was Sweden.
Oh.
Everyone in the Scandinavian country uses the term snipper for girls' genitals. So it's like the equivalent to willy.
Snipper?
Yeah, I'm not... I'm sure.
That's like snapper.
Yeah.
So basically it's a little violent fish.
I feel as well that we should just remind people at this junction that obviously this is not a conversation for little ears.
Yeah.
This is very much an adult conversation. Yeah. It's some adult terminology this evening because we are discussing vaginas, vajayjays, whatever you want to call them. Vajayjay sounds like a vajazzle though. Do you remember when that was a thing? Towie sort of spawned that, didn't it? The only way is Essex. The girls used to go and have a vajazzle.
What would they use? Blue tack? How would they
I don't know. Was it like diamantes? On? Like cubic zirconias?
Yeah, why are you like,
on your... I've never had one.
What is it? We've got a lovely text here. I'm putting my glasses on. Ray... Oh, hi, you lovely lasses. Hello. This is from Linda. I've always used the word min.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that before.
It was a mini, hence it stuck.
Yeah. Although, going back to Towie, don't the Fairs girls, sisters, who used to be in Towie, have a clothes shop called Minis, which whenever I hear it always makes me snigger, because, yes, I am that immature and that base. Let's talk to Morel Harris, shall we? Morel is a sexual health nurse. Morel, we were talking earlier about the fact that, you know, if women do feel a sense of shame about down there, it could well have serious health implications if it puts them off, if it deters them going for a sexual health check.
Well, yes, absolutely. I mean, it can deter them in many ways. I mean, I think these kind of conversations need to start very early on. As I'm a sexual health nurse, I think people do, they come with a certain amount of shame and embarrassment about their bodies. They're forever saying, oh, I'm really sorry, it's not shaven, or I think I smell, or, you know, we're forever reassuring people that actually it's absolutely fine. There's nothing to be embarrassed about. It's part of your body. But I think this conversation needs to start so much earlier on. I think they recognise that with sex education classes in schools now.
Well, Ali was saying that, you know, you have the classes where you're taught the technical terms.
The correct terminology, yeah. It's all about normalising, isn't it, really?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think that's what Laura's done brilliantly, is just, you know, showing the anatomy and physiology and that they're all different. You know, people can start learning from, you know, pictures, you know, original pictures which are accurate rather than pornographic material where everyone's had vagioplasty and everything's shaven perfectly. So I think she's done absolutely brilliantly.
Is there a difference in the attitude of different age groups who come to you?
For sure, absolutely. I think, you know, the biggest apology we get with the younger generation is, I'm sorry, I haven't tidied up. Now, usually when they, you know, get changed, because most of the time I'm fitting coils, they're perfectly, I've never seen such smooth vaginas. You know, I'm born in the 70s, it's a completely different era. And I say, well, you know, you're talking to the wrong person. But it's this concept that, you know, you have to look like an 8-year-old child down there. And I don't, you know, I think that's learning through pornography rather than getting good quality sex education in school.
Yeah, gosh, you've reminded me of a rather embarrassing moment. I don't know if I've ever told you this, baby. Oh, my life. Right. So I went to have a coil fitted.
Lovely.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Turned out the lovely doctor doing it was a regular listener to BBC Sussex.
No.
And BBC, sorry, and thought that she would mention that as she was doing. She said, I thought I recognised your voice. It's the laugh that gave it away. Brilliant.
Why were you laughing?
Well, because I do when I'm nervous. Yeah. You know that. So there I was, legs are kicked. I mean, no.
And
come
on. And did you leave? So keep listening.
She went, I'll never tell anyone you were here. Again, as if it was like some sort of big thing.
Oh, that's awful.
It was a little bit. Yeah, I've never really quite got over that. But I feel better for sharing it now.
Yeah, well, thank you. I mean, I'm traumatised now.
No,
it's not good, Morel. Don't encourage her. Morel, if women are, you know, ashamed and coming to see people like you less and less, you know, because, you know, for whatever reason's going on, but they do need to come and see you. And if they're not, though, what, you know, when should people come to see you? You know, is there anything, I know it's a bit real broad question, but is there anything that the people should look out for?
Again, I think it's starting at the younger generation. You know, I think there's, you know, normalizing the vagina actually gives self-ownership for those young people. You know, then there comes in issues of consent. So if you feel, if you're not detached from your vagina and you don't feel it shameful, you're much more in charge. So I think, yes, people should, I think that should start very early. And I think that would then, you know, cipher into adulthood and people would feel less ashamed. But absolutely, they should come to sexual health clinics, they should come and get their coils fitted, they need to be checked if they're worried about anything, and we're absolutely there to do that, and we do it all day, every day, we've seen everything.
And how low are the, because the smear test attendance apparently is the lowest ever, is that true?
Well, that could potentially be true. I think people feel quite reassured with the HPV vaccines, but they must still go for their tests. Mm. You know, they're 3 yearly, they must still attend. You know, there are cases coming through where people have missed appointments, but yeah, absolutely. They need to have their sexual health checks, they need to have their smears done, and any other concerns, you know, deliver yourself to a professional, they can help.
And just to put all of our minds at rest then, Morel, when you are down there, be honest, yes. What are you thinking? What is going through your head?
She's singing some Bee Gees songs in her head.
You've got...
How deep is your love? No, I'm sorry.
Definitely wouldn't be that one.
No.
I'm sorry. But what am I thinking? I'm thinking, gosh, I hope I can get this coil in, or what is that blister could be? Or, gosh, that's a very normal vagina, or... Wow, she's really shaven. But no, so we're just doing our job, basically. It's just another part of the anatomy.
Have you ever complimented anyone on their vagina?
No, I think they might leave very quickly.
I think
I don't know. How would you feel?
Yeah, that would be slightly awkward.
I think I wouldn't come back again.
Morel, thank you so much
thank
for joining
you,
us. Sexual
That's
health nurse
okay.
and
Anytime.
Broader View podcaster Morel Harris talking to us here on After the Watershed. I'm Alison Ferns.
I'm Bebe Lynch.
I've got another clip for you.
Oh, go on.
Really aware of saying it, but I am saying the word clip. Right, just want to clarify that.
I honestly feel hysterical.
Here's another clip from that documentary we were talking to Laura Dodsworth about earlier, 100 Vaginas.
The vagina is such a magnificent thing. It does so many amazing things, including, like, giving birth to, like, whole new people.
Growing up, I never looked at my vulva because there was no need to. I just washed it. When I did eventually look at it, I really felt like a huge weight had been lifted from me.
There's still a lot of shame around the vagina. I think it starts in school. Boys are taught about wet dreams and erections, and the female equivalent is about periods. We do bleed as well, but we also have the equivalent of an erection and a wet dream.
The penis is this really funny appendage at one end and very powerful and, like, dominating on the other end. But nobody wants to think about a vulva. No one wants to think about a vagina. It's just like, ugh, gross.
It's so true, isn't it? It really makes you think.
That women aren't taught that they can have sexual pleasure.
No, yeah. It is all about periods, isn't it?
Yeah, so whereas... it's about, basically about breeding.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Can I ask you something?
Oh, gosh, go on.
When I ask permission, we know it's going to be bad, don't we?
It's going to be bad.
Have you ever done the mirror thing?
Had a look at my own? Mm. No, I haven't.
Haven't you?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Yeah. And what did you think?
Well, I was okay with it, I guess. I mean, I do it less now because my face and breasts will fall forward so much if I'm, you know, defying gravity like that, that I don't know if I'd see anything. But I am... When the girl on that clip was just saying, the woman on that clip was just saying that she felt a weight lifted, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I guess she's saying that all the time she didn't know what it looked like and therefore didn't know what people's opinion would be. But that's patriarchy, isn't it? I mean, what, we care about...
Yeah, I think we do. Well, I don't know. Yeah, I guess we do. So I won't mention any names, but I was with some friends not that long ago, and this topic did come up in conversation. And it was really interesting because, in fact, I think it was the article that was in the paper about Laura Dodsworth's documentary and her photographs that actually kind of sparked the conversation in the first place.
Yeah.
One of my friends had the photos on her phone, and it was like a game of guess who in the pub. But we were scrolling through going, well, I think that's mine. Oh no, I think mine's more like that. Or more like this. But actually, you kind of felt that it was quite liberating for the people taking part. You know me, I'm too much for a prude. I didn't. I just sat and watched and sipped my Prosecco.
Yeah.
But you got the sense that for a lot of those women, it was actually quite freeing to be able to talk about that part of their body and go, yeah, that's me. That's what I look like.
That's definitely comes across in the book. I haven't seen the documentary yet, but definitely that comes across as, you know, women just go, you know, fine, embracing it, celebrating it rather than being ashamed.
You're listening to After the Watershed on BBC Sussex and BBC Surrey with me, Alison Ferns.
And me, Bibi Lynch.
And it's interesting, we started the programme by kind of asking whether or not you were embarrassed about your vagina. And actually, after talking to Morel and Laura, I feel like the conversation has changed. I now kind of want to sort of say, do you celebrate your vagina? Because I feel like we should be doing that.
Is that why you just took your trousers off?
You weren't supposed to mention that.
Can I ask something that could be a stupid question, but I think it might be interesting to answer? So you've had babies. I haven't.
Yes.
So do you see your vajayjay in a different light? You know, some of the women that Laura was talking about, you know, they...
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, I do know what... Yeah, I do know what you mean. Yeah, I guess... Yeah, I guess you do. I mean, it's... Yeah, I imagine it looks slightly different. Although... Mine came out the sunroof, so probably not too different. But I think it's an important point, actually, because, again, I was looking today at the stats. The number of women who go on to have this so-called designer vagina surgery after giving birth is on the rise rapidly, growing numbers of women going to have that redone. Well, I guess it's...
Porn.
Well, is it, or is it because they feel that they're doing it for their other halves so that they have them? I mean, I don't know. I'm just...
But I guess other halves throughout history have been okay with that not happening.
Yeah.
I mean, so children as young as nine.
Like that, I don't understand. I mean, I understand if you've had a few children and you want to kind of tighten things up down there, and if that's going to give you more confidence in the bedroom, then yeah, go for it. You know, I just think it's a personal choice thing. But 9-year-olds, that's not what that's about. That's about thinking that they look wrong in some way because they've been socially conditioned at the age of 9. I mean, the mind boggles into thinking a vagina should look a certain way.
Yeah, well, the world of Snapchat and, you know, porn in your hand, literally, yeah.
I've just been looking at some of the different phrases or names there are for the vagina. Honestly, there are so many. It's unbelievable. So the kind of more polite phrases, nether regions, lady garden, girly bits, private parts. Some of them are quite frankly revolting. Some of them are food related.
What?
I don't even want to repeat some of them. I mean, furry taco made me smile.
Oh.
But, well, I mean, who's referring to it in that way? Then, of course, there's the animal-related slang.
They freak me out.
There's a few
I don't like that.
The thing is, though, I mean... Yeah. I mean, some of it is quite humorous. I mean, have you ever been to Drusilla's at Alfriston?
Oh, yeah.
It's a zoo. It's one particular enclosure, and you literally see people stood underneath the beaver sign taking selfies, and you know they're doing that for a laugh. You know that. You just see them and go, oh, yeah. I imagine the people who work at Drusilla's must go, there you go, another
there
beaver
you go,
selfie.
Another one.
Of course, some of the terminology,
yes,
we can't probably get away with
don't
saying
even try it.
Or using on the radio. I am, of course, referring to the C word.
Mm.
Our next guest, Deborah Ward, actually has a show which has the C word in the title. We can find out more now. Deborah joins us. Evening, Deborah.
Good evening.
Hello, Deborah.
When you decided to call your show this, you must have kind of ummed and ahed and thought, okay, it might be tricky when it comes to publicising the show because this is a word that a lot of people can't say out loud.
Yes, yes. Well, we certainly thought that. China and I, who wrote the show, we were looking at several articles, one of which Laurie Penny wrote about the word. And how, in a way, the fact that it's so unsayable and seen in this way is like a symbol in our minds on how female sensuality and sexuality is like unsayable and seen as profane. So hence the title has that question, sacred or profane. And of course, the word queen and this unsayable word come from the same root word.
Isn't that brilliant?
The etymology.
And isn't it weird when you think about it, the English language? I mean, it's just a word. Mm-hmm. How is it, why is it that one word can cause such offence and such shock and outrage?
Well, there's been loads of movements to reclaim it. And they've kind of, I'm all about it. I use it a lot. Deborah, the show, there's characters in it. So your show is ranging from Theresa May...
Yeah.
To Frida Kahlo. That's quite the stretch. So yeah. What's the content within the show? How are they fitting in?
The show that we created has come out of physical improvisation all around the theme of me and China exploring what is our sensuality and our experience as women in this world. And we've almost looked at the darkest, the side of womanhood which has been contorted into the masculine, which obviously I'm not saying the masculine isn't okay, but let's say the toxic masculine, which perhaps Theresa May becomes a character archetype for that. And then we've got Frida Kahlo, who's the wild artist, and she brings out all of that wildness with the audience. And then we've got the Virgin Mary, who's breaking all taboos about motherhood. And yeah, the show is definitely wild.
And it's going to be on at the Marlborough Theatre in Brighton on March the 9th.
That's right. Yeah,
fantastic.
Grab your tickets.
Deborah, thank you so much for joining
thank
us.
Thank you,
really
Deborah.
Appreciate it. It's funny, isn't it? The English, like the fact that one word can cause such shock.
And that it comes from that one part of that word equals queen, like the highest position, and the other word is the worst thing on earth.
Talking about kind of reclaiming words, do you remember a while ago, I don't forget the year now, the whole kind of vagina monologues thing, you know, the play. In fact, it was back in 2002.
Wasn't that long ago?
Yeah, the writer and performer Eve Ensler starred in, well, this was an HBO special, which was based on her stage show, The Vagina Monologues. And so the special featured some of the candid, some of the funny, some of the painful insights of women talking about their private parts.
When was the first time you saw it?
You know, it was sort of like an accidental thing. There was like a mirror on the floor and I walked out and I was like, what was that?
I'll go home and do some research.
I didn't look at myself till probably in college.
I don't even say the word to my OBGYN.
And I'm like going to the library and like sneaking in the library, looking through the books. And you know, like I'm covering the book with like something else. And then it's like, admire it. It's a beautiful flower. You know, it's like roses. I'm like, we're not looking at the same thing, you know?
I took photos of it.
You took photos?
I had a Polaroid camera and I would go into the bathroom and take a picture.
Are you embarrassed?
Yes.
All those things are kind of like secret, you know, and it's not for, you know, it's like your own little joy.
Would you do the photo now after speaking to Laura? So if people didn't know it was you. I would.
Would you?
Yeah, because I think it'd be really interesting to, you might not think you have issues, but to look at it and say, oh yeah, I did feel this, and now I'm looking at this, I don't feel that.
Yeah, but to then have a picture of your vagina in a book, on a documentary, on telly.
I like to be published.
You really do, don't you? Wow. It's like, have you ever seen that programme, Naked Attraction?
Oh, I've been told.
I always just watch that and think, how have these people got? I mean, I greatly admire them. I mean, to have that amount of body confidence, I mean, it takes some balls, but you know, anyway, you know what I mean? But to stand there and to just, whoa, this is me. Yeah, I talk the talk when it comes to all of that, but
no.
I don't walk the walk. But there you are saying that from now on, you know, you're all for about championing.
Yeah.
The vagina.
Yeah.
I have a challenge for you.
Go on.
How about getting a mould done?
I'm sorry?
Getting a mould done of your vagina.
Of BB Junior?
Yes, BB's Bits.
Of BB's Bits.
I thought we could call it. I'd like you to meet a friend of mine, Jamie McCartney. This is the gentleman who's just walked into the studio.
Hello, Jamie.
Jamie, thank you so much for joining us. Could you just explain to BB what it is you do, please?
Well, I'm well known for a sculpture I made called The Great Wall of Vagina, which is...
God, that is brilliant.
It's a good title.
Did you come up with that?
No, to be honest, I was canvassing a lot of people for the best title and
you
that,
got
that
it.
One.
That's amazing.
So, hands down.
You know, and it's 400 plaster casts of different ladies' undercarriages or what. I don't know what words we're allowed to use.
Yeah,
undercarriages.
That's
I like that.
One.
I like that. Write
that
down.
That
one's a polite version. Yeah.
Was it hard to find women who were willing to have this done?
To begin with, yeah, because I was just an unknown artist and I was going around saying, excuse me, do you mind if I...
You could get arrested for that,
well,
Jamie.
Well, I was very nearly punched by several irate boyfriends.
Oh my God, you asked in front of the men. Actually,
well,
that's better.
I just think
that's
it's best better. To be yeah. honest about it. But, you know, what happened was about a year into its production, it went on telly, which just totally changed everything and it just legitimised the whole thing and it was just... Recruitment was easy. People wanted to do it.
Why did people queue up for a mould of their vagina?
Some days I had four or five people.
Amazing.
Why did you want to do it?
Okay, so I have a sort of history of making social artworks. So, and I was working on another project for a sort of erstwhile sex museum that existed in London, and they wanted me to do a wall of genitals for this piece. And I have a sculpture business making casts of people, and they wanted me to cast people. So I'm like, okay, I'll do that if I have to. I had no idea how to go about it. It was just like, oh my God, this is terrifying. But I did do it, including men and women, and cast myself as part of this project.
You kind of have to, don't you?
Well, it was just one less willy I had to handle.
Yeah, well, there you go.
So it was
there
like,
you go.
You know, to be honest.
There's that too.
Yeah, there's that too. But during the course of this, I was casting the women, and women were seeing the cast of the women that had come before them, and they were saying, oh, I wish mine looked like that one. And I'd be like, what's wrong with your one? And I got this idea that so many women were anxious about the way that their labia looked. Yeah. And I was just like, I don't get this. I've never seen one I didn't like. So what is the problem?
Of the night.
There you go.
Goes to Jamie.
And then I discovered labiaplasty, you know, cutting off and trimming
was
the fastest growing cosmetic surgery in the UK. I'm like, no, stop with all this. This is crazy. If a guy came up to you and said, look, my willy's looking a bit long and floppy, shall I have a couple of inches off the end? You'd be like, are you insane? So that was my feeling. And I was like, I'd cast myself. And because I cast myself, I was able to compare my willy for the first time with like 17 other guys. And I was like, I'm normal. Who knew? Because there was nowhere to go.
No.
But we were thinking... you'd have more of an idea because you're in changing room in the gym or boarding school, camping, you know. Come on.
Going to the toilet. And you're in the
toilet.
Do you
look at other men's wheels when you go to the toilet?
There is this very weird idea women have about what happens in men's toilets.
Well, tell us.
There are rules.
You know, you're not allowed to
know.
There
are rules. Eyes ahead, you know, no peeking. And if there's three cubicles, you definitely try to be one cubicle apart from the next guy.
Really?
If it's like they're all empty, you don't go and stand next to the guy who's there, you know. There are rules.
The unspoken etiquette of the men's urinals.
Yes, so we don't see nearly as many willies as you'd imagine.
Wow. Wow.
And of course, it's what they look like when they're hard that people are concerned about, not when they're having a slash.
I guess.
So, go on.
I'm fascinated by what you've done. I've got so many questions. I mean, when you go about moulding a vagina, don't worry, I'm not going to attempt this at home.
But I do a kit.
Do you?
Yes.
This shows the gift that keeps on giving.
Absolutely.
So is it just kind of like plaster of Paris? Sort of,
No, so the material that I make the mould from is what dentists use to mould inside your mouth.
Wow.
So it's called alginate. So you mix it up with water, it sets into a rubber in a couple of minutes. And so it's a very sort of soft, pliable material. So we use it on all parts of the body. It's very safe.
I'd have mine as an ashtray.
Would you?
With dips in. Like, or just
don't.
Chips
with
and
hummus.
Dips.
What
I've
do
done
people...
a pregnant belly, which is in reverse for chips and dips. So there's dips in the boobs and then chips in the belly.
So where do people put these moulds they have done of their vaginas? Okay. I mean, are they on display?
Well, I have to say, I mean, basically that artwork was for a public display. So it's been in a museum in Italy. You know, basically it's a public artwork.
Yeah, but do you ever get people who just want to get it done for their other half for Christmas kind of thing?
Yeah, but bizarrely enough, people do want to get there. And I think, I have a body casting business. I make sculptures of all sorts of people, all parts of people for all sorts of reasons, whether it's death masks or whatever. So there's lots of personal emotional reasons, yeah. And so sometimes it's just for fun for couples. Other times it's more emotional, kind of deep stuff. Sometimes it's just pretty stuff. So I don't really think about it, but I do sometimes think, what are you going to do with that?
Yeah.
Some people say it's on my bedside table.
My a friend of mine likes. What do you do?
Oh, good Lord!
What is that? So Jamie is showing us his phone cover. Oh my God!
I just realised that's on there.
Wow! I've never seen a phone cover like that
before. Not quite like that.
Wow! So this phone cover is literally picture after picture of ladies. Vulvas.
It's part of the Great Wall of Vagina, yeah.
And you see, look, I'm doing it. I'm already looking at it,
thinking, which one am I?
It's perfectly normal. This is what people do. Everyone goes up and looks and tries to find their own.
Yeah.
When I had the first show, I invited about 100 of the women that had participated, and they all came along and they were trying to find themselves and they couldn't. And it was great theatre.
Oh, that's...
Then they went off to the loo and took pictures of their fannies on their phones.
And
then came back.
So they could
And they were trying to... And they were swapping phones, trying to find each other's. It was great theatre. It was the most fun ever.
Amazing.
A
girlfriend of mine, her favourite body part of her boyfriend, sadly for him, is his hand. And she had a cast done of that.
Yeah.
I love that idea.
Yeah, well, it's the people you love, isn't it?
And
it's
turn it upside down, put the remote control
down. I've done stuff. But, I mean, going back to... Sorry, you had a question.
Oh, no, I was going to say, again, this is me.
This is your show.
This is slightly anxious.
Not anymore.
Over here. It's quite intimate, obviously, down there.
Mm.
I mean, how close do you have to get to the ladies to mould that part of them?
Well, close as you'd have to get to any part. Basically, I slap on a bit of Nivea so that it comes off easily. And if there's any hair, it would release easy for that. And then I smear the stuff on.
Because you wouldn't want the clay getting inside,
wearing,
would you? I mean,
I'm
that could
gloves.
Cause issues.
Oh, you've got
colour
gloves.
Gynecologically.
I wear blue.
Blue's
a nice fetching.
It's a nice calming colour.
Yes, exactly. The funny thing is, I think people have decided to come and do it,
yeah,
they're sort of... And a lot of my job is making people feel comfortable about taking their clothes off in a bit of stranger. So I guess, that's something that I'm quite used to.
Yeah, and they must really trust you.
It takes trust, but we just chat. We just chat about stuff. We're like, and you have the most intimate conversations because people are like, they're not going to talk about the weather when they're lying there like that. So it's like, it was a real privilege. And people say, what was it like working with 400 vaginas? I'm like, I didn't. I worked with 400 women. It was an amazing experience, I have to say. So I see it as a collaboration between me and 400 women. I'm a tiny part of this project.
Is there money in vaginas?
Is there money? I wouldn't say this thing has made me... I mean, any money at all. It's cost me a fortune. I mean, when I added it up, it took me 5 years. When I added it up, it probably cost me £100,000 in time and materials. Just because it's making big 8-metre-long sculptures that weigh 250 tons is time-consuming. I chose not to do it with photographs for very specific reasons because it just looks like pornography no matter which way you cut it. Mm. So I decided not to, and that was kind of annoying because it meant it took forever because making sculptures takes forever.
Mm.
So, but it sort of Yeah, it was a labour of love.
Is it on show now?
It's not, but there's a couple of opportunities coming up next year, I think. You know, there's I'm on the advisory board of the Vagina Museum.
Of course you are.
There's a Vagina Museum?
I'm a man in a woman's world. It's so funny. You know, I get sort of wheeled out as the friendly male face of vaginas everywhere. And
it's, you know, where is the Vagina Museum?
Well, it doesn't exist yet. This is why there's an advisory board.
Oh, so we're going to have one.
We're going to have one. It's going to be in London. It's going to happen, you know, I hope. I mean, I'm sort of, you know, we got a meeting on Monday, another board meeting, and it's great fun. There's brilliant women on this board, and they really want to make this thing happen.
Oh, my gosh. You need to keep us across this.
Absolutely.
And what's the aim of the Vagina Museum?
I think, you know, largely educational, also kind of honouring the vagina. It's just that it's all that stuff. There is a penis museum, you know. It's kind of like, I think the woman Florence who's starting it, who's a sort of science communicator by trade, she's just like, we need to do this.
And it's about equality.
Absolutely it is, you know. And so because I'm the go-to sort of fanny man because I made this thing, you know. You can't get away from the fact that this bloke did this thing, which is really good because I think part of the story is that, you know, women have a lot of anxieties, and how do you get over them? Finding out what other people are like. Well, how do you know that? So this provides 400 examples, and once you've seen it, you're like, oh, I'm normal.
It's such a simple but brilliant, empowering idea, isn't it? It's amazing. If Ali and I want undone, do you do a 2-for-1? Or?
Yeah, I'll probably sort you out. Well, in fact, you get the kit, do it at home. There's enough to do 2 in there. Or one
Ali,
mistake.
There's our
there
next sleepover.
Go. Perfect.
There you go.
Done.
There you go.
I was intrigued by something you said earlier as well about all the different sort of body castings and stuff that you do. And you mentioned, obviously, you know, some really poignant, some really deep stuff. What's the one kind of job, if you can call it that, you've had to do that's kind of left its mark on you, if you see what I mean?
You know, I do quite a lot of casts of people who are dying. It's quite, you know, so couples, one of them's dying, they want to get their hands cast together.
Wow.
I've just actually finished one. And we also did it as a miniature, as a key ring for them as well, which is really cool. So they can always have them. But that's really emotional because it's, you know, doing a death mask is quite emotional. I did a dead baby's hand, which was really tough. But it's not as tough as for the mum, right? So I just get on with it. And I kind of do it because I feel like it's a bit of a civic duty to do it. I don't like doing it. But when you're working with a living and you know that they're going to die, I find like I cannot help but get really kind of caught up in the emotion of it. It's really kind of, it's quite powerful.
Is fascinating work.
You know? And it's lovely to do it, though. I feel like, wow, what a privilege to be able to do this thing. You know, but it's about love at the end of the day. It's what it all is about. It's about the people we love. And that, for me, is a real privilege. I love my job.
I love you, Jamie.
I love Jamie more than you love Jamie.
I'm spending a day with him at his studio.
Jamie's my friend.
Jamie the fanny man. I mean, the sort of takeaway phrase I'm gonna take home from tonight is, I've never seen one I didn't like. I think if all of us women could just remember that next time we're feeling a bit anxious about how we look down there, just remember what Jamie said. He's speaking for all of mankind this evening.
Well done,
really?
Jamie.
You know, men are just happy to be near one. I know.
In the same room. Same postcode.
In the same room. Exactly.
Yeah, I know. I understand.
Listen, thank you so much, Jamie. Thank you to Laura. Thank you to Morel. Thank you to Deborah. Everyone who's contributed to the programme tonight. Honestly, I feel liberated.
You are. But put them back on, love.
We'll be back next week when we're bringing you a special for International Women's Week.
We'll be talking to sex workers about sex workers' rights.
Live and local, after the Watershed on BBC Sussex.